Listen, everyone makes messes. It's just a part of life. And the bigger you live, the bigger the mess, if you know what I mean. That's why you need Fabuloso. With twice the active cleaning ingredients, it just completely takes the drama out of any mess. It smells great while you clean. The only way to describe it is the scent of passion. And once you're done cleaning, it lasts so long. You know, if you make a mess, you can get your home dramatically clean with Fabuloso. No worries.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packs of juicy Kroger red, green, or black seedless grapes for $3.99 with your card and a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packs of flavorful Private Selection 80% Lean Angus ground chuck for $4.99 each with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The following production is part of the We Be Geeks podcast collective.
From days long ago, from uncharted regions of the universe, comes a legend.
The dream that came through a million years, that lived on through all the tears.
It came here, the Fandom Nexus.
Fabulous secret powers were revealed to our host as he plugged in his microphone.
I have a podcast!
Here he is, your Spider-Pan, Jeremy.
Hello, hello. I know we're a little late getting you some new content this week, but I've had a very busy week, and I bet maybe you have too. I don't know if you've been as busy as I have due to your career. But I know my job, with election happening this past week and working in a local TV news station. Now, I may not be a reporter, but I did have to follow the reporters around and film them doing their jobs. And we made a promo that we were able to air on Wednesday about our reporters being around covering the election. So I worked very late that night, and it's just kind of been a busy week. And so I just didn't get around to getting anything done for this show. I am working on another guest. I don't know when we'll be able to have this other guest in, but I got something special. Hopefully I will be able to do in the coming weeks. But I do have something special for you this week. This week we have W.R. Miller on the show. He's been on the show a long time ago, back when this was the Neverland podcast. And he has some different books that he had written on Star Wars and voice acting. He was a writer for Starlog magazine and lots of others. So that's coming up in the show. And we had a great conversation with him, have lots of fun. We're discussing his new book, where he has got interviews with the people behind the Batman animated series of the 90s. And I'm sure that you're a fan of that show. And if you aren't, it's probably because you just haven't watched it, or you just don't like Batman. It is available in a lot of different places to stream or to own. If you're like me, I own a copy of it. And if you were to watch it, I think you would enjoy it. Even if you were, you know, like, well, whatever, Batman, I don't care. And you watch this show, you'd probably become a fan of the show. It was just that good. So that is coming up later on in the show. And of course, we have some of our usual host chatter type of things, like I'm going to get into right now. So what have you been watching? Well, like you, you probably been watching a lot of election coverage, right? I haven't watched a whole lot of it because once we got it over and done with, it was nice to move on from it. But I did start watching the Music by John Williams documentary that's on Disney Plus. It was kind of late in the evening when I started to look at it, and so I did start to doze. So I need to start watching it again. But it's very enjoyable, and it's nice just hearing John Williams music in a documentary. And if you're not familiar with John Williams, I would be surprised. But if not, this is the composer behind the music of Star Wars, the Indiana Jones series of movies, the Jurassic Park themes. He's done music for the Olympics, Schindler's List, just so much, so much. He even won an Oscar for Fiddler on the Roof. He's a prolific. I mean, Jaws. I mean, he's prolific. If you weren't familiar with John Williams. If you weren't familiar with John Williams and you have Disney Plus, I recommend going and checking out this documentary about John Williams. It's good stuff. I haven't finished watching it, so I can't do a full review of it other than to say that I was enjoying it. I was just also very, very tired, so I didn't get to finish watching it. So I don't get to go do a full review, I guess, for you. So What have I been playing? Well, I'm still trying to work my way through Dead Space, but what's more important of who's been playing what, and this is coming up. I meant to hopefully release this sooner. Let me give you a little backstory. So Lost Boy Philip, also known as Pastor Philip, who's, you know, frequently been kind of a co-host here on this show. He had knee surgery earlier this week. He's gotten to come home now. He's still in some pain, so I'm going to leave him be as far as recording, watching movies with my pastor. And I probably will let him be maybe even this weekend. I don't know if he's feeling up to it. Maybe we'll be able to watch Spider-Man, because that was supposed to be the next movie on our list. But with him kind of being out of commission, he had to get off his some of his medication for arthritis and stuff. That happens sometimes you get older. Well, I guess we're getting older. But he was in some pain because he was off of a lot of his pain medications that he has. I mean, he's had 7 brain surgeries, guys. So he wasn't feeling very good last weekend. I thought, okay, well, you know what? I need to get a show done, but we won't worry about watching Spider-Man. We'll let him kind of deal with things he's going with. So I thought it would be fun. I recently managed to find a copy of the original PlayStation version of Final Fantasy VII. Now, granted, of course, I do own this, or I guess it's a PC version, where they've ported that onto console to where you can just, with a press of a button, you can turn on your limit breaks and heal yourself up, and you can shut off random encounters. You know, you can do that sort of thing. And I have gotten quite a few trophies playing through that a couple of times on my PS4 and PS5, respectively. But now this is the original 1997 game, and I managed to get a copy of. And I thought, okay, I was at some point thinking I would buy a copy for my wife for the Nintendo Switch. It would be the same one on the PC, so she could cheat if she wanted to. Because I, you know, and trying to get my wife to understand my fandom of this game, so I thought, well, let her play the original. I think this she would enjoy it. I figured I'd give it a shot. And how much fun I thought it would be if I did a special episode of, instead of watching blank, whatever name the movie, with my pastor, I was calling playing Final Fantasy VII with my wife. And so I have that episode up there. I didn't get it released yet because I didn't get a chance to. I'm going to record an ending for that and edit it together. And that will be coming out actually probably about the same time that I get this show out. It will be out there. So if you have not yet subscribed to Watching Movies with My Pastor, I do recommend you do it. It's a fun show to make, and you can watch a movie along with this. Or sometimes I've got an edited version where you only hear what we were discussing things about the movie, like Field of Dreams. I'd never seen it, so we didn't talk a lot because I was trying to watch. But we have that out there. I'm expanding some of the things we do, where I want to bring in a lot more facts about the film. So I'm having to do a lot more work and research on some upcoming movies, because we are planning on watching the Sam Raimi Spider-Man from 2002. We also are planning on the 1978 Superman, the extended edition, which we've been kind of wondering, and we might have to look into it. I know I own an expanded edition that's over 3 hours. I'm gonna have to look at the length of it. I think it's like 3.5, something like that. But Philip thinks there might be even about like a 4-hour version, because there's a version they showed on television, and there's one he was talking about, Miss Tessmacher being thrown to the tigers for betraying Lex Luthor, which might have made it into one of these cuts. So we're trying to figure out, like, well, we want to make sure we watch the end-all be-all extended cut when we do watch Superman. So, but that's in our plans in the future. But I want to watch Spider-Man first. And of course, we'll watch some other retro films as we go along and talk about those. You know, we're going to have to watch something for Christmas. And I think what we might watch is, if you've been listening to this show for the past, well, we've almost finished 11 years. This is season 11 here. But if you've been listening, you've heard me mention the musical Scrooge. And I know Philip and I would have a grand time, and I watch it every year anyway. We might watch that for our movie here this December, if we can get things moving along. That would be a lot of fun. I would enjoy that. That would, you know, we might even sing along. Who knows? I don't think you would do that. But of course, you're going to hear me for Final Fantasy VII, since there's no voices. I provided the voices for my wife as we were playing that. But so that episode will be available. By the time you're hearing this, you'll be able to listen to that episode as well. I just have to record an ending, edit that together. I make video versions of those episodes, mainly because we have a specific YouTube channel for that, of Watching Movies with My Pastor, where you can see video versions of the podcast. You can also see, if it's a movie I haven't seen before, there will be video of us actually watching it, because Philip thinks my reactions will be fun. And I'm working on perfecting that. I've got some green sheets to kind of green screen out the couch, which I do need to light it probably better when we get going. So we do have plans for any time we watch a movie that I haven't seen. You might be able to see us do it. But we also need to do some adjustments to the camera we used as well. But yeah, that is stuff we are working on. Let me go ahead and throw a little bit of a reminder that Dubby is a sponsor of this show. If you go to neverlandpodcast.com, find a big Dubby logo and click on it. That'll take you right over there. If you happen to be a gamer and you need a good boost of energy, which you don't want the jitters, you want some healthy stuff, they have drink powders. You just mix it with water. Lots of different flavors at Dubby. You can go to dubby.gg/discount/Neverland, and there's a reference thing. If you give the discount code of Neverland, I think it'll get you to the right places, but it's a lot easier if you go to neverlandpodcast.com and click on that link. It'll take you right over there, and you can use a discount code. You also get a discount code if you happen to go and find my links for Podgagement. That is the service from Daniel J. Lewis. If you happen to have a podcast, you want to get all of your reviews, plus a lot of other great features sent to your email, and different things like that. It's a really, really good service, and I actually owe my yearly fee here this coming week. But I only pay like about $50 a year for just, you know, some simple services, and you can go further than that. It is a great service. He's a great guy. He's a smart guy, and he's got a really great system for you. So I do recommend that as well. Okay, and I do want to remind you, of course, I'm going to pass you over to my conversation with W.R. Miller. There will be some ads, though, that some of you are going to hear that won't be me reading an ad, but will be just pop-up ads. You heard a beginning show, end of show, and they pop up in the middle of the show. If you don't want to hear those ads, you can become a Patreon subscriber, which Patreon subscribers will get an exclusive video version of my conversation with W.R. Miller with a little bit of extension, a little intro and outro kind of stuff. So if you would like that, of course, that's through Patreon. Also, with Red Circle, you can get a version of the podcast, just the audio, without the ads in there. And of course, you won't have the ads over at Patreon either. And of course, you can find links for that right there in the show notes as well. Of course, in the show notes, you'll find some links to go and buy W.R. Miller's new book and all his previous books, which we'll mention here in the conversation, which I'm going to toss you over to right now. Guess what, fans and fandoms, or whatever you want to call us. This is somebody we haven't spoken with, and I don't even remember how long ago. I think the last book that we spoke about, because I don't think you had the your first voice actors collection, but you did have a book, a Star Wars source book, historical source book that you had published, and then you've started doing the animated voice books, which I think you have at least two volumes of that out. But so it's been a very long time, but we have W.R. Bob Miller. If you go looking for his books, make sure you search for W.R. on his initials, W.R. Miller, but we're going to call him Bob. And all right, let me give you a little bit of background. So if y'all remember Starlog magazine, he wrote for Starlog. He wrote Comic Scene, Comics Buyer's Guide, Animation Magazine, Animato, Animation World Magazine. My goodness, there's a lot of books in here, like The Animated Voice and Star Wars Historical Sourcebook, as we mentioned. May the Facts Be With You. That's fun. The Animated Movie Guide, The Hanna-Barbera Treasury, and a chapter in Defending the Resurrection. Credits, you've done storyboards on like Courage the Cowardly Dog, storyboard supervisor even on that one. The Simpsons, Larry Boy, which I think I have the hand-drawn version of Larry Boy, I think on a DVD. I think I have that set because there was like a collection that had all the Larry Boy movies. Well, I guess they weren't movies, and then the animated series. So I've got a lot of your stuff.
Oh, great. Excellent.
But everybody, welcome back at W.R. Bob Miller. And you've got a new book. And I saw you talking to somebody about this, that you had just popped up on another podcast. So I was like, he wrote a what book? And I was pretty excited. I was like, this is cool. This is going to be awesome.
Well, yeah, it's a set of books. It's a set of five volumes. It's called The Unofficial Batman, The Animated Interviews. And it, you know, when I was writing for Starlog and Comic Scene, I was assigned to cover the production of Batman, the Animated Series back in 1992 through 94 and beyond as the show spun off.
We try not to think that was 30 years ago.
And so I interviewed people like Paul Dini, Bruce Timm, Eric Radomski, director Kevin Altieri, and the definitive voice of Batman, Kevin Conroy. Oh, so indeed. I was lucky to speak with him. And so these were all published in Comic Scene and Starlog. And years later, literally decades later, I thought, well, you know, this is like the nucleus of a book. Mm-hmm. You know, let's honor this show. It's still popular. They had to extend the Blu-ray run. You know, there was such a demand for the series in Blu-ray that they it was limited. Then they extended it because sales were so strong. Mm-hmm. So they did it for that and Batman Beyond. And I thought, well, you know, let's talk to the people who made all this possible, you know, and share their story, you know, not only to honor what they did and to find out how it made it so successful, but the reader could also learn how to apply the ethics that each person involved in the shows had, because you had certain work ethics that helped make their lives, you know, their careers possible and made, and that went on to the shows. And what were the challenges? You know, because some of the stuff like executive decisions at, you know, in the higher ranks of Warner Brothers or the economy, that was beyond the artist's control. Mm-hmm. But how did they cope with it? And so my books explore that.
And the nice thing about this is, like, it'd be very difficult to find and collect all of these articles and all the magazines. And, you know, it's kind of sad that magazines just almost barely exist with this kind of a thing. And you can go online and find most things, but trying to go and find the old things that you'd want to keep and reread, that'd be difficult. So it's really cool that you've been collecting these and then publishing them as books. So like, oh my goodness, here's everything from Star Wars. Here's everything from about this cartoon. And I appreciate that. And I've even seen here lately, a publisher is collecting a lot of Electronic Gaming Monthly, and you can buy volumes of collections of those magazines now. So it's like a lot of my childhood is getting to come back. And if I had kids, it'd be great things to share with them. It's like, oh my goodness. Yeah. This was the great age where you'd have to buy a magazine. You have to wait to, you know, you'd hear like, oh, this article's coming and everything. And you get excited and you go and find that magazine. They'd have something cool on the cover to be excited and read about what new movies were coming, what new comics were coming, what animated series were coming. And you would just absorb and read that article again and again, just, you know, anticipating it. It was a completely different time than what we live in now, where everything is so, you get it right away. You don't really have to wait and anticipate. You can go and just get online and find most things.
Well, my books are like one-stop shopping, because yeah. Not all the interviews are from me. Some are interviews with people like Shirley Walker, who's since passed away, mm-hmm. or director Boyd Kirkland. I got permission from the authors of those interviews to include them in this book. And also from about Darwin Cook, who designed the main titles for Batman Beyond, as well as contributed storyboards to the new Batman Adventures. He was a powerhouse talent. And yeah. So, I thankfully, you know, I got permission to publish his interviews. So, yeah, like you said, they're spread over the internet or no longer available. So I got permission to put them all in these volumes.
Yeah. And see, print is not dead, despite what Egon says. And yeah, I'm still old school. I like having a nice printed copy of stuff. And I have stuff still on my bookshelf that I haven't read yet, but I like having it in print. I'm like, I can access this anytime. So I still have a couple of Jim Corcus books that I haven't read yet.
Oh, okay.
Because I think you're the one that connected me with Jim Corcus. Looking through the messages. Exactly.
Yeah. And see, the beauty of it is readers will get the perspective of the shows as they were being made. Mm. And then 20 to 30 years later, when you have the benefit of hindsight.
Yeah.
So they could have retrospectives on what happened and they can talk about it now as opposed to then.
Yeah. And you can get a more broad and full picture, especially Planet Comic Con, which is one of our local conventions in Kansas City. We actually had a few of the creators on there. I can't think of them off the top of my head, but I think we had some of the writers. I don't think we had like Paul Dini or Bruce Timm, but we had some of the other writers and even had the voice actress for Poison Ivy. Which it was kind of fun getting her perspective, because she was not familiar with Batman other than knowing it existed. And so getting her perspective, where she became kind of a fan of it as working on it. And but you get this is now like 30 years after the series. So you get everybody's stories there. But mixing that in with, you know, getting a book like this where you can read and kind of go from the beginning, you know, because I'm sure even you probably got a lot of articles even. When maybe Warner Brothers had announced that they were going to make this and the production was starting, there's probably some articles even going that far back, right?
Yeah, well, pretty much. I actually explore in volume one what the animation industry was like before Batman the Animated Series, where there are all kinds of strictures on superhero shows. I mean, Batman couldn't throw a punch. You know, he couldn't do that. Penguin couldn't smoke.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and all of it was like Adam West type stuff. You know, you have dialogue like, holy hairdo, it's a woman.
You know, but I still have love for that, though, too. The old Adam West.
Oh, sure. You know, those who made Batman the animated series do appreciate the Adam West show, but they wanted to make it nice and dramatic and with angst and make it where Batman could actually throw a punch. And in fact, one episode they devoted to Adam West, where they brought, it was called? It was written by Tom Ruger, who was the creator of Animaniacs, and it was called Beware the Gray Ghost.
Oh yes, and
the Gray Ghost was a pulp fiction hero that inspired young Bruce Wayne back when he was a kid, 12 years old or whatever. And so, as the episode unfolds, there was a crime committed in the Gray Ghost series that was replicated in the modern day Batman time. And Batman teams up with the actor who played the Gray Ghost. The actor's name was Simon Trent, but voiced by Adam West. And Simon Trent was in a financial bind. He was in an old crummy apartment. He had to sell off his valuable collection of Gray Ghost memorabilia. And then he's kind of saved by Bruce Wayne buying the collection for him, because Bruce Wayne was a big fan. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting about the episode also was that the villain of the show, who called himself the Mad Bomber, was voiced by Bruce Timm.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so it was a monumental episode and a tribute to Adam West.
Yeah.
So it was great.
Yeah, that's definitely one of my favorite episodes. I remember when it aired, I was just so tickled when hearing Adam West's voice, and even the design of the Gray Ghost having similarities to the Shadow, and maybe a little reminiscent of Zorro, because, you know, Bruce Wayne was supposed to have been a fan of Zorro when he was a kid. And really, there's a lot of inspiration from pulp comics from the Shadow that got poured into Batman. And so it's nice to like that tribute to everything. It is a fantastic episode. It's a feel good for a dark looking show. It is such a feel good episode.
And it's exactly.
It is definitely a difference when you watch Batman the Animated Series and you compare it to, like, just a few years before we had Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, where you had a 5-episode miniseries animated in Japan, and it was done almost in the style of anime, and the turtles were actually allowed to kick something, or you could hit something, or you could smash a robot. And then we get, you know, the time they get a season, suddenly now they have to drop a pie on them, or, it became comical, which was fine, but... And at the same time, you know, I even had my mother, but parents groups were like, oh, my gosh, they carry weapons. It's like, yeah, but if you ever watch the show, they're not allowed to use it. This is cartoons. G.I. Joe was more violent than this, but you didn't have a problem with G.I. Joe when they were shooting people. So, but then, like, it completely changed with Batman the Animated Series. And I think that opened the doors for, like, X-Men, where, you know, you don't really have so much a lot of punch throwing. And Wolverine was, of course, not allowed to use his claws on anything that wasn't robotic. But you finally had a level where the heroes could actually fight the bad guys instead of tricking them or trapping them like a Scooby-Doo mystery. And then then we have the Spider-Man series, which they thought, well, now we're allowed to punch. But you know what? Everybody punches. Spider-Man will use his webs and he will kick. He'll do it a little differently. Just because we can doesn't mean we will. You know, let's try something else. So it's kind of neat how that progression of what we've gotten to see in cartoons, and even Batman didn't come across as super violent just because he was punching. It didn't come across as even as violent as something like the A-Team, it was different, but at least he was able to, fight the baddies. I mean, this is nowhere even near as violent as the Arkham games, which I think it's almost like a continuation of the animated series, those Arkham games, even having Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill come back and voice them and some of the same writers. That's I think why those games became so popular, is because those of us that grew up, or I guess I was already mostly growing up. I was a teenager. The animated series, it was like a continuation. We just kind of felt it, except for it had a little bit more of the comic sensibilities, where in the comics, the Joker is allowed to be a murderer, while in the animated series, he's like, well, he's kind of a thief and he does a lot of jokes and he might do something that could possibly have killed somebody, but it's not going to happen. But in other terms, we get to see that, no, the Joker has managed to kill a few people, and you can see how violent some of his enemies and how scary they can be. In the animated series, they couldn't even have Ra's al Ghul was an environmental terrorist. He wasn't going, no, we're going to kill everybody like the Punisher. Yeah. So they had to tone a few things down, but it was still such a great precedent. And even the design of having, you know, the dark backgrounds and stuff. I mean, all the different creative ideas and decisions just really led to a lot of, even with that, the I don't know what you would call it. So it was like a retro style, but yet it was science fiction and futuristic at the same time. It just had an amazing style. And I'm like, this is what I feel like every cartoon of a, like when you're going to do a detective or a noir, this is the way it should look. It was just perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's due to the genius of Bruce Timm and Eric Radomski. Eric established the Dark Deco style that's established the mood of Gotham City, and Ted Blackman executed the paintings. He was the background painting supervisor, and so a lot of the credit should go to him. But I made sure that credit went to almost everybody, that all the key people involved in making the show. So I spoke to Ted. You know, I spoke to the designers. I spoke to the story artist, Brad Rader, Kevin Alteri also did storyboards, but he did. He directed Feet of Clay with Clayface, with that astounding second part where Clayface mutates, transmutes into all these different people and characters that he as an actor had played. I spoke with Charlie Walker's proteges. They name themselves now the Dynamic Music Partners. it's Lolita Ritmanis, Michael McQuestion, and Christopher Carter. And Christopher and I are both from the University of North Texas. You know, so we're alumni of that. And Christopher's story is actually fascinating. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah, don't spoil too much of the book. I want to make sure people.
Well, yeah, you should. Well, it what was fascinating was the show was in production, first season, and Christopher was actually watching from the University of North Texas. And Shirley Walker was the supervising composer, and her son was there too, I believe. And he made some connections. He connected with Shirley Walker, and to make a long story short, he actually started composing for Batman the Animated Series in its second season. So he got to join the team on that season. And so the Dynamic Music Partners, they weren't called that then. They gathered together in the 2000s, but they became Shirley's proteges to match her style, because the music needed to be unified, mm-hmm. you know, with one musical vision. And they used a 35-piece orchestra, which was almost unheard of then.
Yeah.
because of the expense. Warner Brothers spared no expense to make this a quality show, because they did want this to be an evergreen show or longevity. And as budgets were slashed later on, of course, this orchestra was one of the first things to go, unfortunately. And so they had to go into the use of synthesized music in the 2000s. Mm. So, but thanks to the Dynamic Music Partners, and specifically to them, I was able to get credits for the musicians who didn't receive screen credit at all. So the Shirley Walker collection is at the University of Southern California. Mm. And so I think it was Christopher through Ian Walker gave me that connection to go ahead and get the list of names of the uncredited musicians for these orchestras. And so now I can credit them in the book, getting nice. Credit where it's due,
yeah.
You know?
Because the music is amazing, and it ties so nicely to the Danny Elfman score, but yet it's just different enough, and it fit the feel of the show. And I always appreciated that you'd hear a little bit of the Danny Elfman theme every once in a while, but they came up with this new kind of almost a fanfare anthem for Batman that, I mean, it's what is that? Da, 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 da. I mean, it's like five notes, but you'd hear those five notes and you would, I don't know, it just struck the right chord. Like, because it was instead of just being dark like the Danny Elfman Batman theme, it had this triumphant, the hero has entered, with still that little bit of darkness. It was a great theme. And I don't know that how much I'd really place it, how often I was hearing that until when Mask of the Phantasm came out and they opened the movie with that theme and the choral arrangement. I was like, oh my gosh. Yeah, that's the theme I've been hearing, but I didn't really connect that that is like a theme for Batman completely. It was genius.
Well, you know, the vocals for Batman Mask of the Phantasm, those are the names sung backwards.
Really?
Did you know that?
No, I did not know.
So Shirley took the names of some prominent people who involved in the series, and it was sung backwards. And if you want to know who those people are, read volume two. So it's all volume two.
And here I'm so used to, like, John Williams will talk about how he went to Sanskrit so he could have lyrics, then he would get some sort of poem that he thought fit and turn it into Sanskrit and then have the choral arrangement sing that. And then you have this clever, you expect that from everybody. Then you have this clever, oh no, well, I'm actually going to give credit to these people, but we'll put their names backwards. That is genius. It's like, yeah. You are in the movie now.
That's right. There's a lot of in jokes throughout the show, and it's a delight to find them out and to share them with the readers,
mm-hmm.
you know. Because, you know, it's my, just like with the Star Wars books that I've written, it's the behind the scenes stories that are more fascinating than what you see on the screen, because it's real life.
Yeah.
You know,
and you get to see how much it really takes to put something like this together, and all the, you know, the faith Warner Brothers really had to have in them to spend this much money and to get it out there and then have it be a success. And yeah, and even today, I mean, you could, once again, if I had children, this would be a perfect introduction to Batman, to give him this series. And I own it, the entire series, digitally. And I'll even sometimes, if I'm just trying to settle and go to sleep, I'll just pop up a couple episodes and just, you know, let it run and just drift off to sleep with Batman going. Then I wake up in the morning and I'm, you know, the theme music is going stuck in my head.
Yeah, because it's a great theme.
It is fantastic. And I do appreciate that also, I mean, that launched the entire Warner Brothers animated universe. I mean, we got a good Superman cartoon. We got a lot of movies at the time. And even the creative genius behind taking a character that was, you know, barely anything, like Mr. Freeze, and giving him such backstory that made him an intriguing character, because now he's got motivations. Sort of like Clayface. I wasn't familiar with Clayface, but from what I've seen in like the Arkham games, the Clayface most people are used to is different, but giving him this whole kind of tragic story, how he get turned into Clayface. Cause now you're pulling for Batman to be able to find a way to cure him. Sort of like we have, you know, turning Two-Face back to Harvey Dent. We really want a cure for Two-Face, you know, despite all the horrible things they do. You think, you know what, if we just find the right way, the right method, maybe, you know, he could redeem some of these characters. And it really helps. I mean, the morality of Batman, of where, this, you know, and people always say, well, you know, the Joker's just going to get out and he's going to hurt people again. Why doesn't he you just kill him or something? It's like, but Batman's like, no, that's for the courts to decide. And there's always a chance that somebody will find some redemption. And you look at like what they've done with Harley Quinn, where there's a little bit of redemption kind of with that character, you know, because it's she's got an interesting arc. And that's another great character that we got from the animated series, where you have someone who was a psychologist or psychiatrist, a doctor, who flipped her lid there with the Joker. And then the potential, like, well, somewhere or another, there was an intelligent woman there. Like, if we could just get that back. So they took characters that were already kind of interesting, made them better, and took characters we had never heard of before, or maybe we were just heard their name, and made them even more interesting. And even by the right casting with some of the voices, I mean, even the voice of Ra's al Ghul, and my brain just went out the window. But we know him, of course, from Tron, David Warner. I mean, so many great parts, and the caliber of actors that they had, even getting for the Penguin, and I can't remember that musician's name.
Paul Williams.
Yes, a fantastic songwriter. Who knew that he would actually be a great, you know, Penguin like this? But oh my goodness, just the caliber of voice actor they got on this, it's amazing. So I mean, goodness, a book that has like interviews with these people, which that's I'm in.
that's in volume three. I focus on the actors in volume three, and I speak to the voice director, who's Andrea Romano, and she actually wrote the foreword to volume three. And
nice.
That's the innovation of the show, is that they went for more a natural approach to voice acting. You know, it wasn't exaggerated cartoony voices. They wanted the characters to sound believable, like they could be in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And that carried a lot of weight and gravitas. And yes, they cast for celebrity voice actors who were able to communicate and act really well with voice acting. Not all live action celebrities can do that, really. Right. But Andrea is so experienced and really is another genius in casting the right people for the roles. I mean, Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. as the second Alfred. Clive Reville was the first, but Clive had to bow out.
Yeah.
But Ephraim Zimbalist Jr., you know, as Alfred, you could hear the quality of his performance. Oh, yeah. You know, taking a chance on Kevin Conroy, who was, you know, had, his background was out of Juilliard in New York and trained under John Houseman, I believed. He was roommates with Robin Williams mm-hmm. and Christopher Reeve. You know, he was friends with Christopher Reeve, which is ironic. They all played iconic superheroes.
Yeah.
And he approached the role not as a cartoon, but as Shakespeare, as Hamlet. That's how he saw Batman and treated him accordingly. And that's how he delivered the voice. And so when he auditioned, Bruce Timm and Andrea looked at each other. That's the voice.
Yeah. And it's amazing when you see like him, but he's like this like real skinny guy, but that amazing voice would come out of him. And you're like, where is that coming from? How? It's amazing.
Born to play the role.
Definitely. And I appreciated seeing an interview with him. I think by the time Mass of Phantasm was coming out and they had some behind the scenes interviews and they talked about how he was kind of developing the voice and the difference between Batman and Bruce Wayne. And he says, you know, Bruce Wayne is a lighter, what, you know, he's this normal person. And then you get to the darker corners of a man's psyche and there's Batman. And it's just his approach to the character was amazing. And all right, granted, like Tim Curry as a Joker would have been very intriguing. Mark Hamill completely just stole that role. I mean, nobody could really have played it that well. And to where you don't even recognize him. I don't think I realized it was Mark Hamill until Mask of the Phantasm. HBO had there behind the scenes, and there's Mark Hamill talking, and they had him doing the voice in the microphone. And you're like, how is that coming out of Mark Hamill? That's Luke Skywalker. It's amazing.
Well, they were astonished when they were casting Mark as the Joker. Mark was had played an executive named Ferris Boyle. For the Heart of Ice episode, which mm-hmm. introduced Mr. Freeze. And Mark says, oh, do you have any other roles that I could possibly do? Maybe a major villain, maybe the Joker. And they had already cast Tim Curry. And then for a reason that Eric Radomski reveals in my books, they couldn't use him or decided not to use him. And so they auditioned Mark and lo and behold, he stole the show. He got the role.
Oh, yeah. But then the only other role I could have thought Tim Curry would have been fun is for like Scarecrow. But they got my brain is not working today. Not Malcolm McDowell does have a role later, but it's got a similar name. You know, he was in Planet of the Apes and so many different things. Roddy McDowell. Yeah. Roddy McDowell coming in for
Mad Hatter.
Oh, he was that's right. He was the Mad Hatter. Scarecrow was somebody significant, too, who did a fantastic
Henry
job.
Henry Pollack the second was the first one.
Oh, so there was more than one Scarecrow.
Yeah, more than one voice actor. They replaced him for the new Batman adventures.
Oh.
And
I do remember that. Yeah, when we get about to like season four, I think, yeah.
That was the new Batman adventures, yeah.
Yeah. That's where we get a complete new look for a lot of the characters, too.
Exactly. And then he played the Question in Justice League Unlimited.
Oh, nice.
Because he has this unearthly voice.
Yeah.
And it's really chilling as he can make it. So, yeah.
Yeah. So I would have liked to have gotten Tim Curry to get a chance to have done something somewhere because I tell you what, when he plays Pennywise, you know, he can be pretty terrifying given him the opportunity. So
sure.
He would have made a great Batman villain or at least a villain on something. But of course, you know, he was pretty fun for Captain Hook on another series. So. Tremendous talent, but even without him, I mean, I'm glad they didn't get him just because we would have missed out on Mark Hamill. And I completely understand where he said without Kevin Conroy, he's not going to play the Joker anymore because there's such a dynamic between the two of them, the way they played off of each other that, yeah, it just can't be replaced. It's going to live on forever. The way that they interacted, it was just great. And Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. Nobody could have played Alfred better to give him just that little bit of almost a snootiness or snarkiness, but not enough to where he wasn't this lovable, almost father figure. And then having him continue over, I actually love him as Dr. Octopus in the Spider-Man animated series. He was great over there, too. Even if it was kind of goofy because they gave him this weird, you know, he's a scientist, so he should have like a Germanic style accent. But he pulls it off so good. He's such a talented actor.
And let's not forget Will Friedle. He played Terry McGinnis in Batman Beyond.
Yeah.
And so he riffed off of Kevin Conroy, who had to play an older Bruce Wayne and more gravel in the voice. And Terry had to bring some masculinity to his own voice to do future Batman. Yeah. And he had played opposite Mark Hamill's Joker in Return of the Joker, the video.
Yeah, which is pretty good, too. So my goodness. Yeah, that's, you know, I mean, as much as it had been tough casting for a Batman and a Joker and all that, imagine being Will Friedle and like, oh, we're going to do a new Batman series. And we're going to kind of, it's like years later, you know, so you're almost like continuing after this fantastic series. The pressure that must be like, you're going to be this kid, Terry McGinnis, and he's going to become the new Batman. Like, oh, okay. All right. I mean, I'd be nervous. Like, okay, I got to do really, really good and do some sort of impressive, really cool character. This has got to be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
When they auditioned him, they
needed to see how well, what kind of chemistry he had with Kevin Conroy.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
And he passed that test. Yeah.
And even with some of the other characters they would bring in later, Tara Strong coming in as Batgirl. All of them could interact with Kevin Conroy was just great. And yeah, it was just, the cast was just amazing. And then you said that's volume three.
It's volume three. Volume four is Batman Beyond. Volume five is Batman in the home videos and in Justice League and Justice League Unlimited.
Which is great. Cause in there you get, we've actually had some pretty good voice actors for Superman as well.
I'll cover that.
Cause I remember we started with Tim Daly. Then we got the guy who took over in Justice League who, They sound so similar, but I don't know, the way that the guy from Justice League on would say, you know, well, this ends now. He had such that Superman authority that it's amazing. It's awesome. It gives me those chills because everybody, if you love Batman, you probably love Superman, too. I would think that's my opinion. OK, so how many volumes is this? I mean, is this coming out in a series of volumes like the animated voice or is it all available one book in a volume or? How's this coming out?
No, it's the hardbounds are available November 15th. There's five volumes. The hardbounds, they're all in color. A little bit pricey, but it's like each volume has like 700 to 800 pages. So it's like you're buying 3 to 4 books per volume at 200 pages each. But they're more like 800 pages because there's just so much material.
Yeah.
And then the paperbacks, which will be in black and white, they'll be coming out one at a time, one volume at a time, beginning next February. So volume one will be February, volume two, March, et cetera, et cetera. And so, and because they're black and white, they're going to be more affordable, but they're paperback.
Yeah.
But if you want something with longevity and you want to see the illustrations in color, then buy the hardbounds. And, you know, even then, the hardbounds, well, you'll want the color ones because I have some photos that are pretty much exclusive, like Kevin Dodd, who voices Wolverine in the animated X-Men. Hmm. He took a picture of himself and Kevin Conroy just a few months before Conroy died. So I've got a full page photo of them both together looking at the camera. In my episode guides, I contacted James Serio, who shared his autograph collection and sprinkled these images where the actors would autograph their images of the characters that they voiced. And so I would sprinkle them among the episodes. So I'm indebted to James for sharing those images.
You know what? November 15th makes it a perfect time for Christmas season too.
Yes.
Just saying, if my wife hears this, hey, you know what, Kim, you can get me for Christmas.
And if nothing else, recommend them to the library.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
this would be a nice, I can imagine even on the shelf having them all lined up. It'd be kind of fun if there's a picture on the, not the back cover, but, you know, on the side where if you put all volumes together, that it forms like a bat symbol would be kind of cool. I don't suppose that happened, did it?
No, afraid not. But I did design the covers.
Nice. Yeah. And yeah, because you've done a lot of storyboard. I think we've seen the picture, which I'm going to get a picture of this, and it'll be there on the cover of this episode. As you can see, this is this fun artwork of the Batman's head. Make sure you go and check this out. And this is available Bear Manor Media, which you can find a lot of different things of here. Theme Park Press is connected in here. So this is, I believe, your publisher.
Yeah, Bear Manor Media is the publisher.
Okay.
But of course, they actually bought out Theme Park Press.
Oh, okay. Well, that would explain it. And then Amazon, of course, you can find it on Amazon. Just make sure when you go looking for his books, you go W.R. Miller. That's the initials. If you look for Bob Miller, you probably won't find him. At least I don't think that would work, but yeah, I haven't tested it. I will put a link, though, to W.R. Bob's website and also Bear Manor Media there in the description. Make sure you go and check it out and order. You can pre-order this. Plus, if you think this sounds fun, you should go and check out, of course, the animated voice volumes, the Star Wars historical source book. I mean, just about anything that you're a fan of. If you're geeking out on something, I bet that he's written a book or collected the interviews with it because you've got a long history. So definitely I'm excited to check this out. This is cool. I appreciate it.
And it's also on BarnesandNoble.com.
Oh, yeah. Barnes & Noble. Can you probably pick it up in a store as well, Barnes & Noble? I like walking into Barnes & Noble.
That I don't know. It's certainly on the online. You could probably order it from the stores.
Yeah.
And yep. Get them that way.
Oh, yeah. And then, hey, if you happen to find a copy in Barnes & Noble's after the release, take a picture and send it to me so we can say, look, hey, there it is. We found it out in the wild. Just appreciate that because it's fun. All right. Well, definitely, Bob, thanks for coming on the show again. We need to have you on more often when you have all these different books.
I appreciate it, Jeremy. This is a valuable public service that you're performing here, and I'm grateful for it.
Yeah. If I can provide a little bit of fun and connect people with some good books, because doggone it, people read. I need to read more than I do. But I'm at the point where I feel like I'm a collector of books. I have so many books that I've fallen behind on trying to read them all. But I like having all this knowledge about everything I love is over on the shelf. So comes in handy when the power goes out or when your COVID has got you locked in the house. I have nothing better to do. Let me read a book. So, expand your mind. But once again, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Jeremy. Wish you well.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. Once again, links to where you can purchase those books will be in the show notes. But right now, we just want to thank Karen Kennedy, Ricky Pope of Christian Nerds Unite, Darren Wilhite of the Wilhite and Wall Show, all of the help that they gave me on creating the intro for this show. I know I thank them every week, but it's worth it because I use it every week, right? Don't forget, you can email us podcast@neverlandpodcast.com. Yes, I know this is the Fandom Nexus, but I'm still using the same old website. We are on Twitter or X as Neverland PCast. Also on Facebook as Neverland Podcast. We have both a fan page and a group. And I do recommend the group because there's more interaction. Jonathan of Diz Radio frequently shares a lot of weird and wild stuff. I mean, he's seen so many like obscure movie type of things. And he likes to share. He says, no, this wasn't a fever dream. This really existed. Frequently does that. He actually today posted something about Shirt Tales, which I think we had a conversation about the Shirt Tales anime series here maybe last year. I bought a DVD of it, but yeah, the Shirt Tales is Hanna-Barbera, I think, even animated, and there was a toy line before there was an animated series. There were toys, I think they were developed by a greeting card company of some sort, so yeah, that's something he posts, so it's worth it for even if you don't enjoy my post, you might enjoy what he posts over there, so make sure you're following Diz Radio over there as well, because I do contribute to that podcast whenever we have one going out. It's been a while since we put anything out. over there. But of course, I'm here. All right. So you can also become an official Neverlander on the Neverland Podcast webpage. There is a join and become a Lost Boy or a Pixie. You become a Pixie because girls are too clever and they don't get lost. And of course, I'll remind you about the Patreon page at patreon.com/Neverland Podcast. Links for that are, of course, on the website, neverlandpodcast.com. Also in the show notes, where is also you will find a link for our Red Circle to become an exclusive member. And you can remove the ads that you heard right before I came back on after the interview. But that is all I have for you this week. So until we talk next time, get lost. In an adventure.